on this episode of Still Loading. Woo-woo! Hey guys, it's Josh. Welcome to the newest episode of Still Loading. And on this week's episode, I am covering the game DuckTales for the NES. And to join me, it's a friend from work, or, well, old co-workers, named Vin.
Hey, what's up? How's it going?
So, thank you for joining me, Vin. It's awesome to actually have a guest for once. I'm usually doing this solo.
Yeah, well, I appreciate, you know, you letting me do this. And I thought it was pretty cool that you're doing DuckTales, which was a childhood favorite of mine, so I got pretty excited.
I'm just happy to have someone who actually knows the game on this, because generally a lot of these games that I'm doing for this 40 for 40 series is stuff that I've never even touched before, or if I have, then I can usually talk a little bit about more about it. But I would always, my goal would always be to find someone who knows the game really well, mm-hmm. and then record it with them. But so far, like, the games on here that I've done are Jeopardy. Jaws was fairly popular, so was Ghosts and Goblins, but no one really played, like, Flying Warriors or Dirty Harry for the NES.
Yeah, I can't say I've played Dirty Harry or any of those, but, I mean, I played Jaws a little bit when I was younger, and it was fairly difficult to get into, from what I remember, especially at that age.
Yeah, well, that game, it's pretty ambitious, considering, but anyway, we're not here to talk about that. Let's talk about DuckTales. So, as I start off every episode, I usually talk about the box art. Now, I don't know if you have an image of the box art up in front of you at all, or...
I can pull it up, but I can also kind of... So, I've never, like... When I was a kid, I never, like, bought new titles. Mm-hmm. Basically, all of my games, like, from the NES era were hand-me-downs from my cousins. So, yeah, so, like, everything that I had on the NES was because, like, something happened to my cousin's house. I think, like, there was, like, a fire or something like that. And, like, their system got caught in the fire, but not their games, so they gave me the games.
That's horrible. I mean, it's good for you, but that sucks for them.
Yeah, I mean, it was terrible, but I think that was the situation. I mean, granted, it was like I was very young when all this stuff happened, so I just remember like all of my NES games I ended up getting from them. And I do remember, like, I don't necessarily know, like, the box art, because none of the games I had on boxes, but I have an image up. So I can at least look at that.
So what I see on the box art that I'm looking at here, it's got the Beagle Brothers kind of chasing Scrooge and Huey, yeah. Dewey, and Louie. And then you have, what's his nuts? Launchpad.
Yep.
Couldn't remember his name. And Scrooge is somehow higher than the helicopter that he's dangling from.
Yeah, the perspective on that is fairly odd. It's kind of like the helicopter took, like, a sharp turn and is kind of whipping him around, I guess, would be the best way to look at that.
That's dangerous for an old man to get whipped around like that. I mean, that's not Jackie Chan.
Right. I do like this box art. I mean, comparatively to the new one, I don't know if you want to, like, kind of, like... Yeah, I don't know if you, like...
much of it, but is it good?
Yes and no, I want to say. Like, if we were to talk about, like, if we get into mechanics, we can do that. We can do comparisons.
No, pretty much wherever the conversation goes, we're just going to roll with it.
That sounds fine. But I mean, like, as far as, like, the box art goes, what I like about this is, like, it was basically banking off of the fact that whoever was looking at this was a fan of the show. Mm-hmm. Whereas the new box art has, like, a lot, it'll show you, like, more of the enemies you're going to encounter and, like, the levels. It does more to, like, kind of, like, paint a scene of, like, what to expect in the game. With this, it's just kind of like, hey, you're a fan of the show. These are the characters that are in the show and also in the game.
They do have Because unless the image you brought up has the back of the box, the back of the box also has, like, it does have some screen captures from the game.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly just, it looks like levels from the Amazon, the moon. Yeah, just Amazon and the moon. There's three total images, but two of them are from the Amazon level, and then I believe one that that better be from the moon. It looks like a spaceship. I can't really tell.
Possibly the moon. Possibly moon level.
But
because there sorry. Wasn't like any like there wasn't like any underwater level or anything like that. To
thank
like
God.
Yeah.
So the front, like you said, the front of the box is pretty much it's definitely capitalizing off the show at the time. The game came out in 89. I don't remember. I know I shouldn't be clicking around during recording, but when did the show come? 87 is when the show originally aired. It was 87 through 90.
Wow. Really? Only that was it? Only like that short of a run?
Yeah, well, you would think that, like, I don't know, DuckTales to me is synonymous with the 90s, but this game, this show barely was released into the 90s. It ended on November 28th, 1990, so it was, like, the first year of the 90s is when it actually ended, but I guess, you know, syndication and whatnot, it just traveled.
I feel like that's so weird, because so if it was 87, so it had a 3-year run, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like it had so many episodes. There's no way. Maybe it came back. I don't know. Because I remember being younger, like 95 and stuff, and seeing that stuff.
Well, there's a lot. The first season, right? From 87 through 88, September 87 through January of 88. Holy shit, there's no way that could have happened. I mean, I guess if they did it daily. There was 65 episodes in the first season.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, from September to January. It had to have been on every single night. There's no way, unless, and I mean, I guess it makes sense because, like, you know, kids' cartoon shows, they don't really release weekly, like, you know, like Criminal Minds or some shit like that.
Right.
Then season two had 10 episodes, which was, once again, November of 88 through March of 89, which is weird. That's even farther spread out. And then third season had 17 episodes. And then there was a movie in 1990. And then season four, quote unquote, season four was only 8 episodes long, from February of 1990 to November of 1990.
That's such a huge difference in just production, from 60-some episodes to barely breaking 10 on certain seasons.
It's weird, because, like, in the way, I mean, animation is different. Like, I've always watched a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff with voice actors, and when they make TV shows, like animated TV shows, networks usually order, like, a certain number of episodes, and then they just, you know, kind of like marathon make them. They just run right through, marathon produce them, that's the better word. And they just run right through it, and they just keep on making them, and they just do it all at once, and then they release them in intervals afterwards. So, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, if you look at
right,
like,
but I mean, with you know, DuckTales being on any network, it's not like DuckTales was being aired on WB Kids or anything like that. Like, these were made for Disney Channel.
Yeah.
Like during that, like, Disney Channel, the era of, you know, these animation companies, kind of having their own networks, like Disney Channel, Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network. You know, it's not like you would see DuckTales on a Saturday morning cartoon, or even like a post school hours where it was like two to four, you would see some cartoons, like, depending on the channel. These were specifically made for those networks. So it's surprising to see them kind of do it like that, I guess. But
it is really weird. I mean, I don't get it. They'll make a big batch and just stop. I don't know. I'd have to watch a lot more of those. Like, I was just curious, and I was like, how many episodes of, like, Tiny Toon Adventures? I know that's not Disney, but there was only 3 seasons of it, and it was 100 episodes total. So not quite, a little bit more than DuckTales, but not by much.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, hold on. DuckTales was, what was it? Total number of episodes for DuckTales, does it tell me? Yeah, no, it's 100. They ordered 100 episodes. That's so weird. You feel like there's, like, a lot more of them.
I mean, I guess if it's, like, they were ending production on DuckTales to then go on to, you know, the other shows that aired during that era, like Tailspin and
Darkwing
like,
Duck.
Darkwing Duck, and I think there was like the Jungle Book had its own animated series for a while. So it probably the way it worked is either they hammered out all those episodes and then released them. Because I feel like it was like a weekly thing, wasn't it? I don't
think it would have been daily, and I feel like almost it would have had to have been weekly, right?
I don't know. But
anyway, so moving on to the game. well, I guess actually to continue, kind of finish up the game box stuff, on the back of it, the since Capcom developed the game and, you know, Disney just licensed it, I guess, did they publish it technically? I don't know.
I don't know if it's technically considered being published by Disney, because Capcom would have had to purchase the rights of via Disney. So basically they have the licensing rights.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, no, because Disney didn't really have its hands. I'm looking at the back of the box. It's distributed by Capcom as well, so they had to have published it.
Right.
Because generally publishers are the people who also kind of distribute. I don't know. Game industry is weird. But no, yeah, they just bought the licensing rights from Disney and made the game. And on the back, since like Capcom was at the top of its game in 89, you know, Mega Man's like at the height of its popularity, just blanking on all the other good games they've made, even though only ones I can ever think of is Mega Man.
Well, back then they made a ton of Disney games. They had like a huge they had a huge partnership with Disney.
Chippendale Rescue Rangers.
Yeah, Chippendale, they did DuckTales. There was I think a Jungle Book game or something like that. They just did like a re-release of like their classic NES games.
But yeah, no, on the back of the box it has a picture of Captain Commando, which I guess was Capcom's mascot, and it's really weird because he's like the image, the artwork they used for him is hyper realistic, and he's wearing like a spacesuit, but there's clearly like a fighter jet in the background.
Yeah,
and he's got a space monkey on his shoulder.
I don't think I ever played the Captain Commando games, but that was like kind of a similar situation with Mega Man. Like they had like the hyper realistic Mega Man box art, not like hyper realistic, but like obviously what Mega Man didn't look like in the game.
Well, you know, what's weird though is Captain Commando as a game wasn't released until 1991, which is 2 years after this.
Really?
Isn't that weird?
Did he have an arcade game at any point? Because I know Captain Commando from the Marvel vs. Capcom series. I've never actually played any of his games.
I believe it was released in 1991 as for an arcade, because it was arcade game, Super Nintendo, PlayStation, PS2, Xbox, so on and so forth, and all the different ports. But yeah, he wasn't. It's a beat 'em up game from 1991. It's weird that it took them that long to like take the mascot they created and finally put him into a game.
Yeah, that's definitely odd, and it's odd that they like had such a weird concept for him. I mean, this also might have been like Capcom of America thing, because it always seems like back then there was like such a disconnect between the Japanese side of the companies and the American sides. You know what I mean?
There really was. Well, and I don't know much about it. Much about it for DuckTales specifically, but if you look, there's a book series called oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the name of it. I even bought the first one of it. But basically, it's basically about like translations between Japanese to English and like what the local Legends of Localization. That's the name of the series.
Okay.
You can find the books online. They're like $20-$30 a piece, and they're like in this nice hardback bound books. They're really nice quality.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a professional translator for games now, but he looks at old translations of video games and looks at like why they would have translated a specific way, like what was the culture at the time, the context, and that kind of thing. And maybe what it should have been translated as versus what it was translated as, because especially, like you said, there wasn't a whole lot of communication between the Japanese offices and the American ones. So something that would have a like specific context in Japan, they were not given that context during the translation, so their translating wasn't 100% as accurate as it could have been.
Right, yeah.
Or the translation was done in-house by the one guy in Japan who could speak, not in Japan, but in their office who could speak English. And that's why you have weird typos sometimes in American versions of games.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of weird stuff. But to move on, what I wanted to talk about next was the actual story of the game. Now, I have the manual in front of me because, like I said, I have this game complete in box. But did you know anything about the story based on playing the game? Did you have any idea of the context of what you were doing?
I think it took me a couple times, like a couple playthroughs, to kind of really get it, which is something that Capcom addressed when they redid the game. So like when I had, or WayForward, whoever had done the remastered version.
I think it was WayForward, yeah.
So when I had originally played it on the NES, it just kind of throws you into the game. You know, you hit start, you're in that level, you're on the computer screen, and you just kind of pick where you want to go, and then you just kind of go. It was following the trends of like most other platformers back then. It was like, you know, Super Mario, you get thrown into the level and you go. Mega Man, I believe it was the same kind of thing where you had your boss select screen and you just go and you play the levels. There was no real, those games, I mean, a lot of games back then, depending on the developer, really a lot of the story would either end up after you had beaten the game, or like small parts throughout.
That's 100% true. Like even, like, sorry, I keep cutting you off. What were you going to say?
No, it's all right. Well, I was going to say, like, examples of that I can think of off of the top of my head where a story was developed kind of throughout would be, like, Ninja Gaiden with, like, an opening cutscene, and then they would have, in between each chapter, there would be, like, little story cutscenes that were, like, quick, you know, a few seconds and stuff like that.
Yeah, and not a lot of games did that back then.
No, not really. And then there was, like, a game that I used to have. I still have it. It's called Legend of the Black Manta or Black Mantis or something like that.
I've heard of it.
It was like a knockoff version of Ninja Gaiden, and it was basically like, do you remember in the arcades where you would see the winners don't do drugs screens
back in the day? I didn't actually get to go to any arcades as a kid because my parents never took me, but I know of those.
Okay,
I've seen them.
I used to frequent arcades all the time when I was a child, so I got to see that screen a lot. But anyway, so Legend of the Black Manta was like, as you played the game, you found out that the game was basically like you were trying to stop a child smuggling drug trafficking ring.
That it was dark for a kid's game.
It was pretty intense. It was like they were kidnapping children to use them as drug mules.
Oh my god.
Throughout the thing. It was like a very like anti-drug game. It was pretty rough. But other than that, I can't really think of like a lot of games that really flushed out a decent story. Like maybe Metal Gear. I've never played it though.
Well,
and, like,
it depends on which version you play too. The Metal Gear on the NES is very different than what it was originally supposed to be on the Japanese MSX.
Right.
So, but no, I think you're right though. They do kind of flesh out the story a little bit more with this as you go through the game. Like once you beat all the levels, because I'm going to say I'm complete shit at this game. I was trying it out again this morning, and I like the controls are solid, but I'm just still not 100% good at them.
Right.
And so I just watched a playthrough of it so that way I could get an idea of all the things that I was not skilled enough to reach.
Right.
And once you beat all four, actually technically five of the levels, if you count the hidden key you can get for the African mine, once you beat all five levels, then the villain kind of reveals themselves, and they basically say something like, if you want your treasure back, you come meet me at Vampire Duck Manor or something like that, and you basically just go back to Transylvania and you fight the final boss then. And then the final scene is like you may have defeated Dracula, but now you are Duckula. I don't know if they call
them Duckula. They call them Duckula. Like there was always like duck puns back on like the show and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's adorable. I love it.
Yeah.
So then you have to, then the final thing is once you beat Duckula, then you have to basically beat, just blanking on her name, cause I barely was like, I didn't have the Disney Channel as a kid, which is,
yeah, I forget her name too. It was like Count something.
It's going to bother me. It is Podispell, I think.
Oh, that's right.
Is that it? Yeah. I think that's gotta be it.
She was like a witch or like a vampire witch or something weird.
Sorry.
Like that.
Magicka Dispel. That's it. So she's like basically turns into something and tries to fly up so that way she can reach the treasure before you. So then you just have to climb up the chain and beat her to it, and that's about it.
Right.
It's the easiest like final screen ever. You just have to know it's coming and then you just race her up, because she does move pretty quickly, but if you know it's coming, you just jump right up and it's like nothing.
Yeah, it was a lot of the games back then were pretty cryptic. I mean, it's been a while since I've played this, and I know I've beaten it a few times. But I think with the thing where the hidden key things, and that was like with DuckTales, is they always hid a lot of stuff. Like there were always certain walls that you could jump over or go around or something like that would lead to like a whole different area.
Let's jump into that then, like, because the storyline, we already said it's based, well, I guess we didn't say it, but to kind of sum it up, Scrooge McDuck is trying to basically just get a bunch of treasures and become even more rich. And yeah, sorry, the actual manual says Uncle Scrooge is a world-class millionaire and lover of adventure. His goal this time is to obtain the 5 lost treasures that were scattered throughout the world. He is off on his adventure with the help of Huey, Dewey, Louie, and Webby. Oh, I forgot who Webby was for a second.
Webby's his niece.
Yeah. They will travel with him through the jungles of the Amazon, the snow-topped peaks of the Himalayas, the haunted house in Transylvania, the subterranean mines of Africa, and to the surface of the moon. How many of the lost treasures will you be able to find? So there's not much of a story to it, but since it is all about treasure, that like finding hidden treasures and stuff like that, like you said, there's a ton of secrets in this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I think the one thing I always struggled with is like that secret key that you were talking about in the mines.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't find that key and still got all the treasures, you wouldn't get that like that true ending. Like you would get an ending, but it wasn't, I don't think it was like the actual complete ending that you were referring to.
Really?
I think so, because like I'm trying to remember back to when I beat it, and this was, you know, almost 20 some years ago. I remember like each level, and I remember beating the game, but there was like something specific, unless it's like you get all the treasures and then you go back to the Amazon.
I believe you get all the treasures and go back to to Transylvania to go to the final boss.
And that's maybe what it is. Like I said, like it's just like the very specific details are like a little foggy in that regard. But,
mm-hmm.
I think it was like a situation where it was like easily overlooked to get that true ending back then, because I feel like also a lot of games did that too, where it was, they kind of laid out a path and it was a very linear path. And if you went through that path, like you got an ending, but like there would always be like certain points where it'd be like, okay, well, if you deviate slightly, then you get the correct ending. Kind of like in the way with, who was it? AVGN did something with the Castlevania, right?
Yeah. Simon's Quest 2 or Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest. If you beat the game under a certain amount of time and getting certain things, then you get the true ending.
Right. And I feel like a lot of games, especially like back then, cause everything was so cryptic, kind of snuck those in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you would think you beat the game, and then years later you would find out like, oh well, no, there was a true way of beating it. And so,
and there's no way you would have known,
right? So, you know, it's like I said, the exact details are foggy on when I had beaten it, but I do remember playing it a lot and, you know, at least getting all the treasures in that game. So I don't know.
No, no, and when I was playing it this morning, I was, you know, going through a couple things, and I found one of the secrets. I'm like, oh man, this is like, I don't know. There's, to me, there's nothing more rewarding, or satisfying than finding a secret.
Yeah.
And when I watched the playthrough shortly after, there is a second secret literally in that same room, but you didn't notice it. So, like, you know, I believe it was in the Amazon. If you go to the right and you go to the first, like, kind of hole you can drop down, there's a vine you can climb back up, but as you drop down on the left side of the screen, you hit one of the blocks over and it'll slide over to the side, and then you'll be able to bounce on your cane up to the statue and then jump off the statue onto the out of bounds area, and you can, you know, hop across. So that's what I did. What I didn't know is that if you, like, you know, you hop across, you fall down into the secret room, then you jump up out of the secret room, and I just went back the way I came. If you,
you can use your cane to then bounce up to that left ledge and then continue going left.
Yeah, and it's stuff like that where, like, you don't, it's kind of funny. I mean, it's just good game design in general, the fact that it kind of plays with your expectations, because you once you feel like you know how a game designer thinks, that's essentially when the game designer is no longer that talented, in my opinion. Like, once it's good to know, like, up to a certain degree, you know, because then it shows, like, their level of skill and you can anticipate it, but when they start doing things that you don't 100% anticipate, that's always a pleasant surprise. I mean, maybe that thing that you don't anticipate will kill you, but still, like, in general, that's how you get the challenge from, when, like, you don't 100% know everything the game designer is going to throw at you.
Right, yeah. And especially back then, like, they did everything to make it look like, to really, like, funnel you into that linear path, and then, like, it would really be up to you to kind of do your best to explore certain areas. Even games, you know, like, going back to Castlevania, like, blowing up certain walls to find items, or if you want to go back maybe a little bit even further to things like Doom, or, you know...
Well, Castlevania came out before Doom. Doom was mid-90s, Castlevania was, like, mid-80s.
Yeah, so, like, Castlevania was mid-80s?
Yeah, original Castlevania was 85, I want to say. Maybe earlier than that. I don't know if it's Japanese release date, but it couldn't have been earlier than 85 in the U.S., since that's when the NES came out.
Right, okay, my bad. I'm on my timeline. But, like, games like Doom or, like, Wolfenstein, you know, they would... I guess, like, an even better, like, visual representation, where it would be like, you know, you're following these hallways, you know, from point A to point B, but throughout there would just be walls and stuff that if you just happen to go over and use your activate key, maybe they would lead to a whole secret wing filled with, like, rewards and stuff. And I feel like there's, like, there's less of that now. And that's what always, like, made me find these older games, like, way more interesting, because it was, it really rewarded you if you tried to break away from what was in front of you.
Well, and to not to get too far off topic, we'll come back to DuckTales in, like, a quick second, but, like, I know you and I both just beat Mario Odyssey somewhat recently.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think in for the first time in a long time, I've found, like, it's a modern game that rewards you for doing that, exactly what you were just talking about. There's so many secrets in that game. In fact, like, you know, with the super secret ending, which I think you said I saw on Facebook, I think you got to.
I just got that. I just beat it yesterday, and I had been trying to beat the very, like, last super secret ending for about a week.
Is that, like, just... I guess we shouldn't talk about the super secret ending on here, in case anyone hasn't heard. I mean, which ending were you talking about? Like, I guess spoilers, for just in case, for people who don't want to know about it. Are you talking about Peach's Castle, or?
No. So, like, after you collect 500 moons, there's, like, a very final level. So there's Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah, I have that.
And then there's Darker Side of the Moon.
That's
only accessible after you get 500 moons, and then it's basically just, like, a long level. It's a very long level where you kind of have to go through different obstacles, and they change every certain section it's challenging and annoying, because there's almost no healing items and there's no checkpoints. So it like you're so used to running around and having checkpoints and being able to find healing items kind of everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then this level just kind of removes all of that, and it just goes, and it kind of falls back to like a traditional Mario where it's like if you die, you start all over again. So,
from the beginning of the level.
Yeah, and it's really annoying.
I could understand that. All right.
So I just beaten that the other day.
All right, so to continue on then, let's talk about some of the different levels that you go to. We already kind of talked about the story. We talked about the chat, like the secrets that they're everywhere, and even I guess the kind of like a closing thing on the secrets within the game. One thing I really like is that even just jumping in random spots, it will randomly just give you gems and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You'll jump on almost kind of like how in, you know, 3D Mario games, to tie it back to that, you'll run through and all of a sudden some coins will appear type of thing, and then you have to run back to collect it. It's kind of like that, but not nearly as... That actually bothers me because I can run faster than I can pick up the coins, and that bothers me. Anyway.
In Mario or in DuckTales?
In Mario. In DuckTales, it's instant.
Right.
And I like that. But no, so... that's pretty much all. I mean, do you have any other things to say about the secrets on it? I mean, other than they're awesome. I mean, I know there's not much to say, but...
Well, I mean, I thought it was cool that, like, certain secrets would incorporate other characters. Like, depending on where you went, like, you would get the butler or the maid. She would be there to give you, like, health items and stuff like that.
Mm.
And that's really the only time you would see her is if you found those secrets. But I'm trying... Or,
Sometimes, oh my god, why am I just blank on his name again? McQuack or whatever. Launchpad. Like, I know he's part of the game in some main aspects, like on, in fact, it's on the back of the box, but, like, sometimes you have to, like, jump onto the rope underneath his helicopter and he'll take you across to the next platform.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, he's there for that, and then I think the Himalayas.
Okay.
Or something like that. But... Yeah, then, like, other than that, it's just the one character, the maid, she's just kind of hidden. Because, you know, she gives out, like, health items that'll, you know, like, either heal you completely or let you take more damage.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, obviously they don't want to just, like, be putting that out there in the main path. They kind of want you to branch off and find that on your own.
Mm-hmm. What I was going to say then about I figured we could move on then to the different levels.
Yeah.
So, the first, I mean, it's... In the order that they show you, not necessarily. I guess there's no particular order you need to play them in. But the first level that I always start out, the Amazon. From what I remember, like, not from what I remember, but from what I played earlier today, it seems like just a... I mean, it's a nice little intro level. I would mm-hmm. say some of the ones are definitely much harder. Like, if you start out with Transylvania, you have, like, enemies that will... go invulnerable, like it's like the skeletons that collapse and you can't hurt them and then they'll reform on you suddenly. But like the Amazon, it's just very basic enemies. I would say the only enemy that makes me legitimately mad is the Venus flytrap looking things.
The Amazon is a really good intro level, I feel like. And if you want to like kind of talk about like how games kind of like introduce gameplay elements like in certain ways, and Capcom, I guess Capcom's kind of like famous for doing this, where like they'll show you something about the character before you kind of get to it. So like the first time you see a Venus flytrap, at least from what I remember on the NES, is like you'll see mm-hmm. it snap. You'll see it load into the screen, and then it'll kind of snap.
So it'll kind of give you a little bit of a hint
of what to avoid, mm-hmm. and like they would do that with Mega Man, where like they would load the enemy in a certain way so that it'll do what it's supposed to do, but like not do damage, like in a safe way to make it so like you know what to expect, and if you take damage from it, it's because your reaction times it's just bad. But the thing with the Amazon that I really liked about it is that it kind of taught you to really explore. It taught you the different mechanics of things like certain objects can be used to acquire treasure if you pay attention and use them correctly. Like hitting the boulders up into the treasure chests in the air obviously causes them to like fall down.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like if you weren't paying attention to that, or if you were to try to choose a different level, certain items don't function that way. Like in Transylvania, the mummies that are chained, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you were to do that level first, if you were to kill the mummy and then they have like the ball there, if you hit that ball, like the ball and chain, it only goes up so high. It doesn't go up as high as like the boulders do in the Amazon. So if you
they're like heavier, they're chained to something.
Right. So like if you were to, I guess like if you were to replay it in reverse order, if you were to see that ball, you'd be like, oh, well, this doesn't, and you were to see a chest, maybe you wouldn't make that connection.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like certain players have, and you know, not to like be insulting of anybody, but like certain players maybe don't make those connections as easily as other players do. Cause I feel like from what I've seen, a lot of people struggle more with certain things. I think that's why like the Dark Souls and those types of games have become so popular, is because they're like way more challenging now and they cause people to really think critically.
And I'm glad that that's kind of coming back. Like, I'm not a big fan of them because I don't like being bad at things. But
right.
I'm happy they exist because they kind of, like, I don't know. I'm all for like easy games and stuff like that because I like feeling accomplished and like I'm doing stuff. But at the same time, there's like nothing more rewarding than being able to beat a game that you've struggled with for like an extended period of time. Even what is it? Even if you look back at like some of what's the one game? Metal Gear Solid I beat like last year, right? The original, not the original Metal Gear, but you know, the PS1 title.
Yeah.
And that final boss I hate with a burning passion, but I felt so accomplished after I beat it. And too often games don't really give you that anymore. They're like, the final bosses are pretty much just quick time events.
Yeah. And that just has to do with the industry trying to be more accessible to, you know, to a broader audience. But so, but anyway, so with the levels, I mean, I feel like everybody's, maybe this is me projecting, but like everybody's favorite level would be the moon level.
Yep. And so, you're 100% right. Everyone's favorite level is most likely the moon level, mainly because of the music.
Yeah, I feel like the moon level is probably looked back with the most nostalgia because of the music. I mean, like, as far as like level complexity goes, it's really nothing too special.
No, I would say it's more of like a maze type of level more than anything. Like the Amazon is pretty linear. You have an upper level and a lower level, but it all leads to the same spot. So you eventually climb up high. Transylvania's kind of maze-like too, because there's like mirrors that transport you different places.
Yeah.
But like the moon is just as much so, because the spaceship is just, and you can go underneath the surface of the moon, and you can also climb up into the spaceship. And there's just so many different places to explore, and there's just so many different secrets in that level. And on top of that, why would you ever want to leave with that music playing?
It's definitely been the best, the most, like, when I think of that game, I immediately think of the moon level. I also, like, immediately think of the fact that, like, yeah, like, that music, the moon level music, like, is the first thing that comes to mind. And I really like the way that they did it in the remastered version.
Mm-hmm.
I think like remastering the songs, they did a great job, which was a concern of mine, because you know, a lot of people and I guess it's like a big thing recently, is like Hollywood has been remastering a lot of stuff, and like even the game industry is like kind of rebooting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so like when you have those experiences when you're younger and you kind of see them reapproaching them, it kind of affects you negatively before you even see the product.
Because it's so hard for anything, because everything you look at from your childhood, especially, I don't know what it is with like people from our generation and even slightly older and now even younger, but we are obsessed with nostalgia. We're obsessed with, you know, recapturing our childhood or things we missed out during our childhood that we always wanted. And so when you have an experience like that and you go back to play it, you look on it, when you think back on it with like rose colored glasses. You're always, everything's just happy and sunshine and rainbows.
Right.
I
mean, yeah.
I understand not everyone's childhood is happy, but not talking specifically about that. But like, whenever someone tries to take something that was so pure for you as a child and tries to reimagine it or recreate it, they have a very high bar to hit in order to make sure that it reaches the same level of expectations that you remember it being when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And not everything, and the reality of it is, like, when you play a game as a kid, not every game is going to be as good as you remember it. Like, I love, what is it, Toy Story 2 for the N64, but go back and play that game. It's not the greatest game. I have
that game, and I think it was one of those situations where I got it from one of my cousins, and I absolutely hated that game. I hated it. But I beat it. I don't know why. I committed myself to beat that game, and it was like torture for me. I didn't enjoy it, but I was like, I need to beat this game.
See, I had the opposite thing. I got it, and I loved it. I don't know what it was, but I loved the open world. Anyway, we're not here talking about Toy Story 2. We'll have you on for that episode. I'll have you on for that episode, too, so that way we can have me loving it and you ripping it apart. It'll be a good time.
That's fine, yeah.
But you're right, though, with the remasters things, it's a little bit hard. It does cause a lot of concern, and like I said, it's hard to hit that mark that was set so long ago by like your childhood memories and everything.
Yeah, I think like if we want to do a comparison of the remaster and the original, like the remaster did a lot of things right as far as presenting the game to a newer audience and presenting it in a better way than the original did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the new one actually gives you an introductory level. It gives you, like, a plot setup, and it gives you, you know, obviously better-looking character sprites and better-looking animation and just better-looking environments and such. But there's also a lot of, I mean, me personally, I know you were saying earlier that you felt like the original game is very tight on its mechanics, but, like, you just haven't really figured them out yet.
Yeah.
And I can agree, like, the original game had really tight mechanics. Like, jumping, you felt like you were, like, really in control of everything. The enemy hitboxes, your hitboxes, everything felt really well polished. Whereas the new one, a big issue that I had is, like, I felt like everything just felt slightly off because it wasn't exactly the way I remember, the way the original was. I don't know. Have you played the remaster at all?
I did a little bit. I played the introduction level, and that was honestly about it, because I don't know what it is about the mechanic in DuckTales, just like the bouncing mechanic, but here's the thing. I think this is the reason why I'm really bad at it.
Yeah.
It's because it is pure platforming. Like, Mario is a platformer, but, you know, you still have fireballs. There's a lot more, like, there's a lot more variety in Mario's platforming. It's, you know, like, moving platforms, and you play, sometimes it's waiting, just learning timing and stuff like that.
Mm.
With DuckTales, it's pure spacing. You have to understand how far you're jumping. You have to understand how high you can jump on a bounce, and like where Scrooge is going to go when you control him. And especially at the end of like the Amazon level, there is like the final gauntlet of that level is just little tiny blocks that you have to jump across. Either you can do it with your pogo stick, which you can jump higher and you have a little bit more leeway with the jumps, but like at the same time you can grossly overestimate your jump and then screw yourself over.
Right, yeah.
And so that, like, that's why I think I'm so bad at it. It's precision jumping. Mario has precision jumping, but it's usually not towards the end, not until the end of the game, versus this where when you're still trying to figure out the controls and how Scrooge works and stuff like that, they throw you into precision jumping. And that's not a bad thing. They still kind of work you up to that within the level itself, but it's just something I've never been good at. So it's not... I would say, like, if a little bit better design would allow, like have something that tests out the user a little bit more in between there, but that's more of a minor gripe compared to anything else, so.
Right. Yeah, and you're right, it is a lot of precision jumping, and like I said, that was really my issue with the remake, is that it just felt a little looser, and I would find myself making more mistakes in the newer one than I did with the original. But again, you know, the new one is nice because it gives people the option of, who may not be collectors like you and I, to really experience like such a game that's held in such high regard. Like, I don't think I've ever met anyone that's criticized the original DuckTales game.
It's very few and far between. And like, it's funny because I've said this before on the podcast. I don't know if I've told you all about this, but my first console was the N64. So okay. For the people who follow this podcast, I apologize for hearing this for like the millionth time. But so like a lot of these games, though, I didn't get to grow up with. So when I play back like 3D platformers, I am so much better at than 2D ones.
Right.
I am horrible at any of the original Mario Bros. Games. Even if you count Double Dragon, which I know is a beat-em-up, but for some reason they decide to throw random platforming sections into it.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But in the same trend continues on for me with DuckTales. Like, I'm just not 100% good at it. But It's just, like you said, like something about the game itself just kind of makes you want to keep playing. It's the same reason I got, like, I like Chippendale Rescue Rangers. It was fun to play. And I don't know, I guess I think that's what games are. I feel like I'm keep talking about comparing old games to new games, but I feel like that's what a lot of new games are lacking. It's just fun. Like, they're going for straight serious, which is fine. Like, I love gritty and hardcore type of, you know, like Call of Duties and shit like that. To a degree, right. But at the same time, I feel like you still need those games that you can just sit back, check your mind off, and just have a fun romp through something.
Right, yeah.
And that's kind of what DuckTales does.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like a lot of the older games, that's kind of like the atmosphere that they all kind of try to achieve. Because don't forget, back then, you know, the barrier for entry for games was they were marketing them as toys.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it was like you would see them in like a KB Toys or like a Toys R Us or something like that. The idea of like needing more mature games didn't really happen until our generation was maturing, you know? So yeah. It was like we grew, the industry grew as well. So
no, yeah, I mean, it makes sense because now the average age of a gamer is like in their mid-30s or so, and back then it was like 8 years old, so you didn't really have much else. But I guess to move on to the last thing I wanted to talk about was the music, but before we do that, is there any other things you wanted to touch on that I may have missed?
As far as like the level design or anything like that, or just in general, I don't know.
In general, it could be the level design, it could be anything.
Well, I'm actually like looking at like some of the maps of the game, and it's funny to look at them from like a pulled back view to see like just how small they really were. Certain ones, like obviously like Transylvania and the Amazon, it's all pretty linear, but it's interesting to see just like, I guess like at how simple but in our mind complex we made those levels out to be.
Yeah.
You know, like when you're pulled back that far, it's kind of funny.
Well, it's because you can only see like such a small portion of it, at once.
And I don't know. I thought it was clever. I thought a lot of the levels like felt really nice aesthetically. They all felt like different from each other, and it didn't feel like constant repetition.
Finish what you're saying.
Especially things like you know, not just aesthetically, but the Himalayas. Like, you couldn't pogo stick on the snow or else you would sink into it. Like those little features were cool.
And I always like it when games do, or game developers in general, just do those kinds of things that require that attention to detail. Like, it's something they don't have to do, but they do because they're thorough in their design, or they just genuinely care about the games they are making. No, you're right. I don't know. I was going to say was a lot of old Nintendo games, they had such limited color palettes and like sprite palettes that they could choose from. So it was always, you could always see a mark of a bad game when every level looked the same. A good game developer could take the same, I forget how many colors the NES was capable of. I think it was like only 16 or something like that.
Right.
It was a really small color palette. I'm blanking on what the exact number was, but it really was something like that. Like that little, like there was very little color to it, but the fact that they could like take that color palette and make something so interesting out of it is just a testament not only to their game design but also to like their artists.
Yeah, definitely. If you want to move on to the next point,
All right. So I guess the final point I wanted to talk about was just the music of the game, and we already kind of touched on the moon theme and how amazing it is, and I'll probably slip that in somewhere in the midst of this. upset. I was listening to, when I was playing through the game, I was actually enjoying even music from, like, the Amazon, as well as, like, Transylvania kind of bothered me, but I think, if I remember, the African Mine had a really good beat to it as well. Like, just in general, the music from this game, was each song, each track from the different levels was very distinct and unique, but also actually catchy. It wasn't just different for the sake of being different. It actually fit the mood of each level.
That's a good point. Again, that kind of goes back to, like, the just kind of the era of developers being so good that they could craft this, like, feeling and, like, these songs. So it's, I mean, obviously, like, music doesn't come down to a developer, it comes down to the composers that they were using. But, like, Japan at the time had some amazing composers that were making games.
And what's strange is a lot of the composers that made this music for video games weren't, like, they were, like, essentially programmers that had music backgrounds. They weren't necessarily, like, going to school for to be, like, a, like, for music theory or anything like that. Like, they had those skills, of course, and no one mm-hmm. can just write the Mario theme by accident.
Right.
But I think Koji Kondo was a full-on composer who did Mario, but, like, a lot of, like, old video game composers and stuff like that generally didn't start out like that. They kind of worked into it and then realized, like, oh, I guess I am a composer now. Don't know exactly, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but I know it was stuff like, and not everyone started out like that. I believe Koji Kondo did, but not, like, he you know, went to school to be a musician and, like, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm actually double-checking myself now because I totally pulled that out of my ass. But, hold on, let me see. He was assigned to compose music for the console's subsequent games. He was hired for composition and sound programming. So he was, like, a combination of, like, music and programming. You had to be able to do both to get a job back in those days. Now, like, since you're able to actually put MP3s within games, you can just have a regular composer. I mean, like, Danny Elfman and who is it? Hans Zimmer wrote music for games earlier, like, last decade or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it was like a completely different beast back then. I feel like just understanding, like, the way that you could structure music in those games. Because, I mean, like, think of, like, how many, I mean, I guess it doesn't necessarily apply to you because you started off with an N64, but, like, thinking back on, like, how many games I've played during that initial 8-bit era,
mm-hmm.
only so many really stand out in my mind. Like, and I've played a ton of games. Like, I played, obviously, like, the big names kind of stick out. Zelda, Mario, almost anything Capcom did. Castlevania, those types of games. Like, the Metroid games. Like, that music is, like, so iconic. But then I've played games where it's, like, they were enjoyable, but, like, the audio just doesn't stick in my head. Adventures of Bayou Billy. I play that game a ton. I can't tell you, I can't hum you a song. I have no idea. Like, if you were to play me a song and be like, do you know where this is from? I wouldn't know.
I mean, that goes into a whole nother conversation, which we could totally do. I would totally do another episode just on music and video games with you, but, like, just talking about, you know, that's just because there's no memorable melodies in Bayou Billy while everything else has a memorable melody, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but, like, even things like games that continued on and had, like, multiple installations. Like, obviously, Bayou Billy was, like, a very obscure game, and I think that only, like, that one run was just an SNES thing.
Sequel.
Yeah. So, like, even games like Ninja Gaiden had tons of installations in its series, and I played that game a lot when I was a kid, and I don't remember a single level tune from any of the games, like any of the levels in the first one. A game that I played a ton was the Wolverine game by LJN. I played that game a lot. And a lot of people hate it. I loved it.
Well, see, like, I remember the music from Ninja Gaiden, though. Like, I remember that. You know, I didn't... I liked the Ninja Gaiden soundtrack. I lost my tongue there for a second.
Yeah. Well, how long ago did you play Ninja Gaiden, though?
The last time I played it was over a year ago.
Okay. See, like I haven't touched it since I was like a kid. That's the thing.
Ah, okay.
You know what I mean? So it's like it's more fresher in your head than it would be for me, but at the same time, like I haven't played DuckTales. I mean, I guess like I played the remastered one when it came out, but like prior to that, I was still being able to hum the music in my head, and it would pop into my brain, and I'd be like, "Oh, I love this song."
I guess it kind of like sums like I guess it's kind of like a good closing point to leave off on. You like you said, like this game just sticks with you. Like you, I know we kind of went did a roundabout way to come to that conclusion. But yeah, no, like you'll just remember bits from the game, whether it's the music, whether it's some of the levels or the gameplay itself. Like the first thing that I think of when I think of DuckTales, and like I said, I didn't grow up with it, but the moon theme and pogo sticks. Those are the those are the two things that comes into my head. Moon theme and pogo sticks.
Yeah. That's like it. No, you were saying like it's like the way it sticks with you is like that's what makes like a good classic game. You could go through it and not remember exactly everything, but there'll be something there'll be like a cue that reminds you of something, and then you get excited and you go, oh yeah, I remember over here. If I do this, it does this thing, and I can blah blah blah. Get like an extra life or something like that, mm-hmm. and like I feel like that's what makes these older games like fun to play, especially for me, because you know, or people who played them when they were younger, when they go back, they may not remember every single little detail, but like little things come back here and there, and that gives you that little like the little like boost of excitement of like not only are you enjoying a game that you played, you know, that when you were a kid and you had a lot of fun with, those memories of like remembering things is
you still remember all the tricks of the trade from when you were a kid.
Yeah, exactly. It's
the same thing, like, for me, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, the original one, that was mine. Like, I can go back and one-shot that in, like, an hour and a half or 2 hours or something like that.
Right.
And it's just because I played it so often as a kid.
Right.
But I guess to wrap everything up, do you have any, like, final thoughts or impressions you want to say about DuckTales? For me, I guess it just, like, to just kind of start it off, I would say it's a classic game. It's one of the best out there. It still holds up today, even with its, even though it's coming up on 30 years old, which is disturbing to think.
Yeah.
In 2 years, it'll be, like, 30 years old. That's crazy. So it's 28 right now. But, no, it just the gameplay is fun, the music's fun, or not fun, the music is excellent, the controls feel good, like they don't feel too floaty or anything like that, just overall a really solid game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I were to leave off on any note, it would be like the game itself, I said earlier, was like, this is one of like the few games where I've never heard anyone, you know, speak ill of it. There's like this trend going on now where a lot of people are going back onto older games that were rated very highly or are kind of praised a lot for being, you know, at the time like designed very well or, you know, kind of like what they would call, you know, masterful games. And there's like been this trend, at least that I've noticed, is like people really kind of like breaking them down and kind of being like, oh, well, it's not that great because of this, this, and this. You see that a lot with Zelda, especially Ocarina of Time, after Aaron kind of spearheaded that.
Oh, yeah, Eco-Raptor or whatever.
Yeah. With his like, sequelitis thing. I've noticed a lot more of that, like, mentality kind of coming forward. But, like, DuckTales, I would be genuinely surprised if I ever saw a video of someone deconstructing DuckTales in that same light.
I mean, I'm sure you could do it. The reality of it is, though, and this is not to make say DuckTales is a bad game. Like, I'm sure if I really sat down and thought about it and really played through everything and figured something out, like, you could even make the critical argument, you know, like, the storyline isn't fleshed out at all, you don't know that, like, sometimes the platforming it ramps up too quickly, there's not a lot of pacing involved, like, that kind of thing, but that's just at a glance. But the reality of it is this game, not maybe not this game specifically, but all games like that, they set the stage for something much greater later on. When you look at games from the Nintendo, no one knew what the hell they were doing with game design. Right. There was no such thing as game design. No one knew what made a game good or bad at that point. No one understood how to interact with the player. And that's why you have some... That's why the the difference between bad games back then and bad games today is so different. Like, bad games today, they're just boring. There's nothing interesting about them. They may work fine, and they may, like, they may not have too many technical glitches. I mean, there are exceptions, you know, like Sonic 06 and shit like that. But, like, but in general, bad games today are just boring versus bad games back then, back, you know, on the Nintendo, they were just unfair. They were completely unplayable. You couldn't get past certain things because there was no there was no concept of game design. And understandably, why would anyone care that they see this Nintendo selling? Let's just throw money at it and see what we can get back.
Yeah. Yeah, but, definitely. That's definitely a good point. And that's true. Like, anything, even like anything you could look at and kind of deconstruct that way. I feel like the mentality of like needing to go and forth and do that. I would be genuinely surprised if I saw anyone approach DuckTales that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually just held in such high regard, and like everybody thinks of it so fondly. If no one thought that DuckTales was such a good game, they wouldn't have bothered with a standalone remastering of it. And then they wouldn't have bothered to do the remaster where it's the three Capcom games.
Yeah.
You know, because DuckTales kind of like – DuckTales, when they announced a remastering for it, I feel like a lot of people got excited. And it did so well that it kind of allowed them to then go, okay, well, like, let's bring Chip and Dale's back. Let's bring Tailspin back. Let's, you know, put them all together as a bundle.
It's a smart idea.
Yeah, there's a reason why people like this game so much. And, like, if you haven't had a chance to play it, it's at least worth finding it or, you know, emulating it or whatever.
Just something. Just give it a shot.
Yeah, to just experience it. And, like, that's kind of what I'm doing with PlayStation games. Like, I was always a Nintendo kid growing up, and I have a PlayStation. I bought a used PS2 off of someone, and I'm trying to go back and collect all the big titles just to experience them, because it's like so many people hold them in such high regard. You know, brand loyalty aside, there's a reason why they have such a deep, passionate fan base. So,
But all right, so I guess to wrap everything up, we're just game's good, give it a shot. And I shouldn't say give it a shot, go out and play it, you lazy bastards.
Yeah, definitely play it.
All right, so that pretty much wraps it up for this episode of Still Loading. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Vin, for joining me with this conversation.
I'm sorry, what was that? My headset cut out a little bit.
I was just saying thank you for joining me for this episode.
Oh, yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate you letting me come and ramble on with you.
Oh, it was fun. I know we kind of went off the DuckTale end, but
it's all right.
We always brought it back. So you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Still Loading Pod on all of them. Please rate, review, and subscribe the show to get the word out about it. Vin, is there any place that you would like to do you have anything that you want to like advertise for yourself or anything like that, any like social media type of contacts?
No, I'm not really doing anything right now in that regard, but if there is anything in the near future, I'll definitely let you know.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thank you very much, and I will thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Vin, for joining, and we will see you all next time.
All right. Thanks, man. Take care.